week, we left off with Joshua rallying his community, rallying this fledgling tribe of Israel that he had inherited from Moses. And he's getting them together, and he's got a challenge lying before them. And Chris presented that beautifully last week in saying, choose this day who you are going to serve. Choose this day who you are going to serve. That challenge still lingers out there, doesn't it? And it's not a decision you can make one time. Yes, we make a big decision and we decide to follow Christ. We put Him on in baptism and we seek His way. But it's a decision that we have to choose time and time again. Jesus put it this way. He said, pick up your cross daily and follow me. Joshua is asking the people of Israel, choose this day. Who are you going to choose? And the people say, we'll choose Yahweh. We'll choose the Lord God. That's who we're going to choose. And he says, I'm not sure. He's not convinced of their sincerity, of their directness of proclamation. But they again assured him, no, but we will serve the Lord. This is coming from Joshua chapter 24. And then Joshua said to the people, you are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen the Lord to serve him. And they said, we are witnesses. Choose this day. What did they choose? See, as we are continuing to progress, we see that God is dealing with people as individuals and creation as a whole. Then he goes to where he deals with families through Abraham. Now it's extending forward and he's dealing with nations. And we have to ask, you know, I feel like a lot of times I can relate to these people. In the spirit of fervor, in that moment of decisiveness, I feel like, yes, I will always choose God, right? I will always make that decision no matter what faces me, whatever challenge, whatever struggle, whatever sin, whatever enemy is in front of me and facing me. I like to make that proclamation of, I will always choose. But when you're in the midst of the battle, when you're in the midst of enemy territory, it's not always as clear-cut as that, is it? And it feels like we don't oftentimes know what to choose. And we know choose the Lord. I mean, we know to choose His way. But sometimes it just doesn't feel as direct. And it feels complicated. And it feels difficult. And these people, Joshua, it's easy when Joshua, their great leader, who's led them through all these victories in their mission to inherit this land that Dakota read earlier, a land that was going to be a promise and a beauty of splendor wrapped around with God's goodness. But it's been a fight to realize that vision. It didn't just come handed on a silver platter for the people of Israel. No, it was work. And with Joshua standing there, it's easy to make that decision. Joshua's here. He's following God. He will be with us. Of course we're going to make that decision. But when you turn to Judges, we see a change. And let's look at Judges chapter 2. Now the angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I brought you up from Egypt and brought you into the land that I swore to give to your fathers. I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall break down their altars. But you have not obeyed my voice. What is this you have done? So now I say, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall become thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare for you. Then we see that Joshua passes away. The great military leader, this great person of faith, this one that had the vision to see into the promised land and say with Caleb, the only two, that we can take the land. It doesn't matter what giants are ahead of us. Well, now he's no longer with them. And how did the people respond? Well, verse 11. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them and bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. Here they are confronted with the choice. I mean, the time to make this decision is not when everything's easy or when it's convenient to do so. Any of us can make decisions in those moments. The real choice and the determination of our hearts is when we are confronted with the demon that is confronting us, whatever that is. And for the nation of Israel, it was these other false gods. And God said, break down their altars. And they didn't. Why? You know, Kyle Idleman, in his book, Gods at War, he said idolatry is not an issue in the church. It's the issue in our world. You know, it's easy to allow other things to just slip in and to accept them and say, well, it's okay to allow this to continue on in my life. I can serve God while also peddle in this too, right? So it's easy to say, you know, well, I can dabble in both my faith and I can dabble in my interest in these other gods. And we may not call them gods. And some of these things that become gods to us aren't necessarily bad things in and of themselves. But if they take priority and possession of our heart, then they become a god. It's difficult, though. Because to trust God says to trust what I cannot see that lies in front of me. And trust, it's almost an antiquated word now. I mean, we don't trust anybody or anything. I mean, if anything, what we see on the media day in and day out shows us the very reason why we shouldn't trust. I remember when I was younger and it had snowed. And you know how seldom it snows down here. But we had gotten a little bit of snow, and my brother and I, you can tell Lucas I told this story, it's okay. My brother and I were out playing in the snow, and I had my big hunting boots on. And I told him, I was like, I don't know why this brilliant idea popped into my head, but this idea popped in my head that, hey, if you just like crouch down, I will jump over you into the snow. And he said, no, you're going to kick me. I said, no, I won't. Just do it. Just trust me, right? Just trust me. I will do it. So I back up, and I've never been one to have any sort of skill jumping vertically or jumping, period. Hence the reason I didn't play basketball when I got older. So I back up, and I run as fast as I can, 1 foot cleared. Yes, see, I told them, just trust me. Problem is, I have 2 feet. And that second foot caught him right against the side of the face. Big hunting boot. He was madder than a hornet's nest. Okay? This was not a happy scene. Now, thankfully, we didn't fight or anything, but I think it was more a shock than anything. Like, I trusted you. You were not. I don't know why I thought this was a good idea. But in our lives, and that's a silly example, but in our lives, you know, we get burned, don't we, right? We put our trust in other people, and then they betray that trust. We put our trust in our governments, and they betray that trust. You know, we put our trust in other entities that are supposed to support us, and then that trust is betrayed. And then we hear God saying, trust me, choose me. And every time we have trusted, it feels like that we've only come back with heartache. And so while it should just be a clear and easy choice for us, in the midst of this territory, it's complicated, isn't it? And our hearts have hardened a little bit. And for these people of Israel, they have been known to sort of be fickle in this way. And yet they have seen every step of the way how God made provision for them. They saw every step of the way how God won the victories for them as long as they trusted in Him to fight those battles. And they even moved into this land that almost seemed an impossibility for them. I mean, think about how impossible it must have seemed being a slave in Egypt. And remembering your parents, grandparents as being slaves in Egypt. And then Moses saying, no, God has something better. I mean, that seemed impossible, and they couldn't get past Egypt, and yet here they are. They are there. There's a passage that I think is significant in this conversation. It comes from Deuteronomy chapter 8. If you would, turn with me there. It's quite a lengthy reading, but I think it's worth the read. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 1. The whole commandment that I command you today, you should be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land that the Lord swore to give to your fathers. Now remember, this was written during a time when Moses was still alive. And you shall remember the whole way that the Lord your God has led you these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And he humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word, every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Your clothing did not wear out on you, and your foot did not swell these 40 years. Know then in your heart that as a man disciplines his son, the Lord your God disciplines you. So you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God by walking in his ways and by fearing him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs, flowing out in the valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper. And you shall eat and be full, and you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. So all that sounds great, right? I mean, yeah, we want the promise. We want the blessing. We want the fruitfulness. But the next part, take care lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his rules and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built good houses and live in them, and when your herds and flocks multiply and your silver and gold is multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart be lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, who led you through the great and terrifying wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground, where there was no water, who brought you water out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna that your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and test you to do you good in the end. Beware lest you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. Be careful unless you say when you enter the land, my power, my strength, my accomplishments, my success, my own path has won me this. I think that's interesting. You should remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may confirm his covenant that he swore to your fathers as it is this day. And if you forget the Lord your God and go after other gods and serve them and worship them, I solemnly warn you today that you shall surely perish. Like the nations that the Lord God makes perish before you, so shall you perish because you would not obey the voice of the Lord your God. So here again, God's dealing with them as a nation. And he's saying, look, I'm going to give you this. But it always comes with a decision. Who provided it and who is it for? What's your decision going to be? And I'll have to admit, I mean, even though there's an ancient context to this, and it's for the people of Israel and the time of Moses, and they're inheriting the land that God has given, and we live in a very different set of circumstances today. When I look around, and I see the abundance, and I see the fruitfulness, and I see the flourishing of our world and our societies, I have to ask, are we as a people looking to God and saying, you have blessed me? And are we returning that blessing back? Or, as Jimmy said, giving first. I thought that was powerful. You know, all throughout the Old Testament, and even into the New, God deals with nations. Right? He deals with people as individuals. He deals with families. But he also deals with nations. And he uses the nations as partners to accomplish his purposes in this world. Paul writes about this in the book of Romans. I mean, we see this all over the place, that he uses the nations to accomplish his justice, to accomplish his good work. But every time that nation turns from looking upward to him to looking inward at their own ability and their own power, what happens? What follows that? Everyone begins to do what they think is right. Everyone begins to worship at their own idols that they create. When they turn their eyes from God to themselves, they begin to say, look at what we have won with our power. That's a dangerous place to be. And I don't want to politicize or anything like that. That's definitely not what this is about. But I did hear a sermon one time that by someone that said, is God on America's side? I thought, what an interesting question. I don't often listen to other people's sermons just because there's a lot of reasons for it. But this one, that question really kind of drew me in. And essentially, the preacher said, God's on God's side. The question is, whose side are we going to choose? And I see those bumper stickers that say, God bless America. And for certain, I want that. But look around us. He has. The question is, are we blessing him back? Are we using our goods, our liberties, our good possessions to be a blessing as people to the world, to seek justice, to ensure his mercy, and to walk humbly with him? I just don't know if I see that. Maybe I'm cynical. I don't know. But my prayer is that when we see these stories, that we don't just say, well, that was something that happened a couple thousand years ago that really has no relevance to me or us or to where we're at. But to say, what are we choosing? Who are we choosing? Who am I as an individual choosing every day? Who are we as a people, as God's people, the church? Who are we choosing? And is that reflecting in our culture? You know, when you turn to the end of Judges, there's a lot that happens, and I really don't want to gloss over Judges, but when you look at the end of Judges, verse 25 to me always sort of stands out. The very last verse here. It says, in those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And that's the way the book ends. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Does that afford to flourishing and beauty and blessing? When we all do what's right in our own eyes, as individuals, as a church, as a nation, does that, the end of that mean that, well, goodness is going to come from that? I don't think so. And yet we live in a society that's what it feeds on, right? You be you. You do your own thing. You live the life that you want to live. Don't worry about anybody else. Nobody else matters. You just do what's right for you. You do what feels good, and everything will be okay. And Christopher and I were talking about this past week. I said, I feel like, as a culture, we're beginning to feel the deep pains of that kind of thought. Because we see it all around us. Everybody's just doing what was right in their own eyes. Those who, and it's cliche, but those who don't know history are destined to repeat it. We would do well to read from these ancient books that God has given us to speak to us. What is our choice? When we choose God, and sort of the reverse of that before we conclude, what does it mean to choose God, and what is the result of that? To choose God means to to choose hardship because the world's not going to understand it. To choose God means to choose justice in the face of injustice. To choose God means to choose love in a world that easily and would rather just hate and divide. To choose God is to choose to be compassionate and to embody Christ's work in our culture, in our city, in our families. And that's the choice that lies before us. Joshua said, choose this day who you will serve. As for me and my household, we will serve him, the Lord. I pray this morning that as you leave here, that thought lingers. And you say, each and every day, in every aspect of my life, I am choosing the higher road. I am choosing the better path. I am choosing the Lord. And while that path may be fraught with battles and challenges and sometimes things we don't wish to embark on, that's always the better way. If you recall in that passage we read from Deuteronomy 8 just moments ago, it said, yes, there was testing in the wilderness, but it was to do you good in the end. And I believe that still lies behind this choice today. Yes, it's difficult to make that choice in the wilderness or to make that choice even in the promised land when things are good. Maybe even harder because we're surrounded with such comfort and it can seem like, well, my hands have gained me these things. I don't need God because I can provide for my future. I can provide for my well-being. I can provide for fill in the blank. But the choice is there. Who are we going to choose? What are we going to choose? That's the question as we stand and as we sing.